all the best works in Bitcoin made audible. This is The Cryptoconomy with Guy Swan. What is up, guys? I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And that's what we're doing today. We're reading about Bitcoin and Lightning, actually. We have got one from BitcoinMagazine.com. Aaron Von Wertem has done numerous privacy articles recently. I think this is like the fourth one in the last like 3 or 4 weeks. And they're all kind of bridging a couple of the same concepts. And this one is an extension of the PaySwap idea that he covered a couple of weeks ago. But I thought it was a lot more applicable and interesting in the context of Lightning. So I think this is a really good one to hit on the show, and I want to break it down a little bit after we read it. But it's titled, Paying Yourself. Self-payments could be a key to Lightning privacy. And so that is what we are reading today. And he references the developer that has been posting about this and working on this and recently has gotten a grant with Square Crypto, but nobody knows his name. His username is ZMNSCPXJ. And I do not want to say that over and over again throughout this article, so we are going to simply refer to him as Z. All right, with that, we will talk a little bit about this article after we get through it, but let's go ahead and jump into the read. Paying yourself? Self-payments could be a key to Lightning privacy. The Lightning Network is best known for its fast and cheap payments. But the Layer 2 protocol could also offer more privacy than on-chain payments. Since transactions are not published on Bitcoin's blockchain, blockchain analysis is largely impossible. The Lightning Network does present its own privacy risks, however. Payments are routed over a network of users, and nothing stops spies from participating in the process of forwarding transactions while monitoring the flow of funds. On the Lightning Network, blockchain analysis can be substituted for network analysis. There are some solutions to limit these risks, like Tor-style onion routing. These help, but depending on network topology and types of payments, weaknesses can remain. The Bitcoin and Lightning developer, going by the pseudonym ZMNSCPXJ, or Z for our purposes, has in recent weeks published extensive analysis of persisting risks on the Lightning Dev mailing list. Based on his analysis, Z also offered a solution. Similar to PaySwap, his proposal for on-chain privacy, covered by Bitcoin Magazine 2 weeks ago, the developer thinks that self-payments could be an important part of the privacy puzzle. Understanding self-payment. In a previous article, we discussed PaySwap, a proposal by Z to improve on-chain privacy by seemingly inverting the relationship between payer and payee. Z actually initially came up with this idea in the context of the Lightning Network. In fact, it would probably be of even better use on the Lightning Network. Some of the trade-offs embedded in the on-chain alternative do not apply on the Layer 2 protocol. In short, for the Lightning version of PaySwap, the self-payment is part of the same payment route. To explain how this works, let's look at an extremely simplified version of a Lightning Network. Alice has payment channels with Bob and Carol. Bob has channels with Alice and Dave. Carol has channels with Alice and Dave. And Dave has channels with Bob and Carol. All right, so there's a diagram here. That might have been a little bit hard to follow in audio, but basically it's a circle. You've got Alice connects to Bob, Bob connects to Dave, Dave connects to Carol, Carol connects back to Alice. So everybody has two connections, like we're all holding hands in a circle and I've got someone on my left and someone on my right. And since this example is given from Alice's perspective, just remember that Alice has got Bob on the left and Carol on the right and is across from Dave in this circle. So if Alice wants to pay Dave 3 Bitcoin, she'd normally route the payment through either Bob or Carol. Bob or Carol would charge a small fee for the service, but for simplicity, we're going to ignore fees in this example. However, the fact that in reality fees are paid will be relevant a few paragraphs down, so keep that in mind. For now, we'll say that Alice opts for Bob's route to make the payment. She sends 3 coins to Bob, and Bob goes on to forward 3 coins to Dave. The payment is a success. But unfortunately, in this example, it would be easy for Bob to correctly assume that Alice paid Dave 3 coins. He knows the amount because he forwarded it, while if Alice wanted to pay Carol, or Carol wanted to pay Dave, they could have done so directly, without depending on Bob as an intermediary. If Bob is a spy monitoring network traffic, his correct assumption harms both Alice and Dave's privacy. Z, therefore, proposes an alternative. Alice could route the payment all the way back to herself, a self-payment, with Dave taking a very big, quote, fee. The fee, in actuality, would be the real payment. To pay David like before, Alice would, for example, route 5 coins this time. First, she'd send the 5 coins to Bob, who would forward the 5 coins to Dave. Then, this is the trick. Dave would go on to forward the payment to Carol, but he only forwards 2 coins. Lastly, Carol would forward the 2 coins back to Alice. In the end, Alice is 3 coins poorer, and Dave is 3 coins richer. Hence, Alice paid Dave 3 coins. This self-payment would mislead both Bob and Carol. Bob forwarded 5 coins and may logically but wrongly assume that Alice paid Dave 5 coins. Meanwhile, Carol would arguably be even worse off. She'd think that Dave paid Alice 2 coins. From Carol's perspective, the direction of the payment is inverted. If either Bob or Carol were secretly spying on network activity, they would have been misled about the size and/or direction of the payment, benefiting Alice and Dave's privacy. If spies are misled often enough, it could even render such spying activity useless altogether. PTLCs, standard amounts, and more. Everything about the example above is simplified, from the network graph to the amounts transacted. While more subtle privacy risks, such as fee amounts and time locks, are ignored altogether. Meanwhile, it is assumed that even if both Bob and Carol are spies, they are not cooperating. Or worse, they are one spy pretending to be 2 users. In reality, both the privacy risks and privacy benefits of routing are greater and more nuanced at the same time. Addressing all these subtleties is beyond the scope of this article. Z's submissions to the Lightning Dev mailing list are a better resource for a more in-depth analysis, and more generally, research into Lightning privacy is ongoing. Still, it's worth pointing out that Z's proposal to improve Lightning privacy go beyond self-payments. In some scenarios, additional protocol changes would in fact be more or less necessary for self-payments to be effective privacy improvements. The 2 most important changes are a switch from hashed time lock contracts, HTLCs, to public key time lock contracts, PTLCs, and adoption of standard amounts. So let's look at these 2 in brief. Right now, Lightning payments are routed using HTLCs. All users along a route essentially pass on a code which guarantees that they can claim funds from one counterparty if the other counterparty claims funds from them. This is how funds are forwarded over the network. Unfortunately, if cooperating spies are part of the same route, they can use the HTLCs to tell that different hops are in fact part of the same payment, to an extent undoing the benefit of onion routing. PTLCs would leverage cryptographic tricks to prevent spies from linking different hops to the same route. Z also proposes that Lightning users adopt standard amounts. While optional, wallets would be encouraged to split payments up into smaller but interlinked payments, where each smaller payment consists of standard amounts. If the standard amounts are, for example, 1, 2, and 5 coins, Alice in the above example would make 2 payments of 1 coin and 2 coins, instead of one payment of 3. Or if she makes a self-payment, she could send 5 and route 2 back to herself. If enough users would limit their fractions of payments to standard amounts, spies cannot rely on amounts to link different hops to the same payment. In the context of self-payments, users could even route non-standard amounts from the payee back to themselves, making these look even more like regular payments. Self-payment drawbacks. The on-chain version of Z's proposal, PaySwap, comes with significant trade-offs. Compared to a regular payment, more transactions are needed, which translates into higher fees. On top of that, PaySwap transactions require interaction between users outside of the Bitcoin protocol. Regular Bitcoin transactions do not. On the Lightning Network, these drawbacks don't hold up, or they hold up to a lesser extent. Lightning payments require interaction in either case, so a self-payment wouldn't make the situation worse. And while some extra transaction hops are necessary to make a self-payment, these hops happen off-chain, so they don't require extra block space. That said, self-payments still come with some drawbacks, even on Lightning. While cheaper than on-chain fees, extra hops do cost a bit more in routing fees. Additionally, as more hops are added to a payment, the risk of a failed payment increases, and the risk of a spy being part of a route increases too. If only Carol was a spy in the above example, the self-payment would have given her more information than a simple route through Bob would have. Lastly, of course, there might be other, as of yet unforeseen, trade-offs as well. Self-payments are a relatively new proposal. As Z concluded in his emails, quote, "More analysis on the use of circular payments when paying may be in order," end quote. All right, so that concludes Aaron Van Wertem's article on Bitcoin Magazine about self-payments on the Lightning Network and how they may add to privacy. So I really want to break into this concept because there's a lot to add, particularly with these other technologies that are coming out like AMPs and the PTLCs and kind of what the differences are. And I kind of want to expand on it. So let's go ahead and hit our sponsor. I'm going to go grab something to drink, and then we will jump back in and get a guy's take on this article. All right. So this article, again, was written by Aaron Van Wertem. And I know I've probably said this 100 times on the show, but you got to be reading. You got to be following Aaron. He has some of the best technical breakdowns and covers so many concepts and like developments like this. And I literally read everything that he publishes. We had him on the show and had a really, really fun conversation. God, I don't even know how many we've done on the show by Aaron now, but highly, highly, highly recommended if you haven't explored his work in the past. And he still, to this day, I think has one of the best breakdowns of the Lightning Network in the Understanding the Lightning Network series that was published on Bitcoin Magazine, and which is in audio on this show. So if you want to go back, that's like episodes 47, 48, and 49, I think, way back in the day. But let's talk about this privacy technique and Z's proposal here. So I didn't read the PaySwap one just because I thought the concept is broken down pretty much here, except without all the on-chain complexity that's needed with the kind of atomic swaps that are essentially going on when you send a payment to and then back that needs to be guaranteed essentially prior to anybody sending anything. So it makes it a little bit more complex, as well as each of the individual transactions are a little bit bulkier than a typical one, but then it would need 4 transactions in total to actually do the pay swap system. But on Lightning, none of that. That's a huge trade-off on chain, particularly when the chain itself is just not going to be used for payments like that in the future, not for small or traditional things where you would want privacy, at least in the context of a single payment. And then including the fact that I think there are going to be privacy options on chain, which are far superior to something that costs an increased amount of block space. Like, for example, paying through a large aggregate coin joins where part of it is literally a coin join of your other coins. But then also one or two of the outputs are actually payments hidden within the coin joins. And with something like that as a technology, and then also cross input signature aggregation, which enables you to combine multiple different inputs and parties into a single joint signature using Schnorr, which is not there yet. Like Taproot and the first implementation of Schnorr that have BIPs now, and we'll probably see in the next year or two on chain, or at least on like as an implementation. I really hope that's fingers crossed. I hope we get it by the end of 2020, but it might be a stretch. But that will not yet have cross input aggregation. So not quite, but it is certainly in the works, and it is certainly part of a major part of the reason why Schnorr is such a huge feature and efficiency boost that's possible going forward, and really can make payment aggregation and coin joins not only far more ubiquitous and basically give privacy just in the nature of aggregating with other people into one group of inputs and outputs that look indistinguishable, that don't have a direct track from, you know, one, if you're in a group of 100 inputs and your one output is in a group of 100 outputs and all the signatures are essentially combined into one, or like highly, highly compressed and tell very, very little information about what's going on, well, then nobody can really pick out your specific input to your specific output. But the big thing with that is that it's also more efficient. So just by the nature of saving fees, you get a level of obscurity or obfuscation from the traditional blockchain analysis that you normally wouldn't have. And it's not perfect. You know, there's a lot of caveats there, and you would still have to go, still have to consider whether or not you would want to use standardized amounts to really like hide and break up the origin of your coins. But regardless, I think for on-chain privacy, there's a lot more interesting stuff, or at least far more efficient options than something like PaySwap to use on-chain. But on Lightning, as Aaron pointed out, and as Z has, you know, argued in the Lightning Dev mailing list, on Lightning, those trade-offs really aren't a problem. And that's why he originally kind of thought of this whole concept in the context of Lightning, but obviously it does work for on-chain as well. So real quick, let's go back over the example. Like, let's look at this, like, extremely simplified Lightning map and kind of what we can discern, because there are a couple of caveats that Aaron kind of admits are there but doesn't really get into that I kind of want to talk about. So this is like this is essentially a circle, right? Like Alice is holding Bob's hand in her left and Carol's in her right. And then Carol and Bob are both holding the hands of Dave on the other side. So we've got a little circle. And when payments are routed through, if I'm routing as Alice, if I route a payment through Bob to Dave, well, Bob can assume that that payment is the amount that he routed, and that the payment is going to Dave. But he really can only assume that it's going to Dave because he has an entire network map, and he sees that I have a channel with Carol. So obviously the payment isn't going to Carol, or I wouldn't have used Bob and Dave to route to Carol. I would have just routed straight to Carol in our channel. So that's really the only reason that Bob would know that the payment stopped at Dave. And depending on like how Carol updates, like what the balances of her channels are, she might publish to the network that, okay, like now my channels are balanced this way, and it would appear as if a payment has gone through those channels. But in kind of how the Lightning Network actually works in the real world is Dave might have 10 other channels with other people. And because of the nature of all payments being onion routed, Bob really has no idea that this stopped with Dave. And maybe Dave has a private channel with just another end user. Well, then Bob really has no idea where this payment went. And the increased connectivity, every amount of every other channel that I have, that Carol has, that Bob has in their mix, the more obscurity there is to where the payment has come from and where it's going to. For instance, Bob doesn't know that it's my payment. He knows that it came from me, but again, because it's onion routed, it could have come from a private channel with, again, a private user that's connected to me that I forwarded. So this is where, this is something that I've been reading about and trying to explore a lot lately, is that Lightning may be most interesting, even though it facilitates a massive amount of payments and really allows for exponential scaling, as it refers to kind of the movement and the velocity of money within the Bitcoin system. I've really just been fascinated with it in what it does for privacy and how it essentially enforces a degree of privacy by default, and the fact that it's an off-chain protocol so that network analysis is not persistent. Blockchain analysis can be done indefinitely. Like if somebody wasn't doing blockchain analysis 2 years ago, well, they can start today and still look back 2 years and see what's been going on. But in network analysis, if you aren't doing network analysis right now, well, then you're not going to be able to discern any information about payments today in 6 weeks when you start up your spying program. None of it's recorded. None of it, like, someone already has to be keeping a history and a map of all of this in order to be doing that. And still, you're granted, just by some of the fundamental elements of the Lightning protocol, you're granted a much higher degree of privacy. And that's really, really interesting to me. Okay, so back to the example. So the pay swap over Lightning, the self-payment, is essentially like a normal payment is, you know, you put money in a bucket and you pass the bucket around. Like, I pass the bucket to Bob, Bob passes it to Dave, Dave empties the bucket, Dave keeps the bucket. And then it's like, okay, well, the bucket disappeared, Dave is probably the one that's got it. Whereas in the self-payment option, you pass a bucket of funds around, and when it gets to Dave, he takes out like a huge chunk of it, but then keeps passing it to Carol back, and then it lands back at me. And now, like, from kind of a network analysis, like, okay, well, what the hell happened? There is some information that can be discerned from this, but it's not very reliable information. As Aaron pointed out, like, if I'm doing this with 5 Bitcoin and I'm essentially dropping off 3 Bitcoin on the way back to myself with Dave, well, Bob sees 5 Bitcoin moving to Dave and Carol sees 2 Bitcoin moving away from Dave. Neither one of those are the payment, and neither one of those give the details as to who is paying who exactly what. But what's funny is that this is even AMPs just by themselves. Now, if you don't know what AMPs are, I'm pretty sure Aaron has an article on this, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go back and check. But we've covered AMPs a couple of times on the show from numerous different perspectives and people who kind of broke down the concept. But AMPs are the idea that you don't have to send a payment over one channel. In fact, the fact that you only have, like, you know, $100 in channel A, $100 in channel B, and $100 in channel C means that if you can only use one channel at a time, well, then the max that you can ever send anywhere is $100, even though you've got $300 locked up in the Lightning Network. AMPs are atomic multipath payments, meaning that you break up the payment over multiple channels. So I've got 3 channels of $100. I send 50 over channel A, 50 over channel B, and 50 over channel C. Now, that means actually, let's just use our example, the same one we've got. I've got Bob on my left, Carol on my right, and Dave at the other end. I'm trying to send Dave $100. Rather than sending $100 straight through Bob to Dave or $100 straight through Carol, I send 50 through Bob, I send 50 through Carol. Now, if we want to take the pay swap idea and really confuse everyone, well, we can send, again, we're trying to get 100 to Dave, right? You know, let's call it sats. We're sending 100 sats to Dave, because screw dollars. But let's say I send, Bob is on my left, Carol is on my right, and they're both connected to Dave. I send through Bob 150 sats toward Dave, but I only paid Dave a 75 sat fee. So he's trying to get 100. He's got 75 that came from Bob. Now he forwards the other 75 to Carol. This is the normal thing that Aaron laid out. 75 to Carol, back to me. However, at the original payment, when I sent 150 through Bob, I also sent 25 through Carol on my right side, and that one stopped at Dave. So Dave got 75 from Bob and 25 from Carol, but then it left an extra 50 remaining that still needed to go back around to Carol the reverse direction back to me. So in the end, Dave has 100 sats, and I got 50 back from Carol, except that the original payment wasn't just all the way through Bob. I actually split it up through Carol. I went a little bit through Carol and then an excessive amount over through Bob so that there was a circular payment. Now, what this does is that Bob and Carol talking together actually wouldn't reveal the entirety of the payment, even if they were the same person. Caveat here, this is dependent on the PTLCs rather than the HTLCs, because right now, any split-up payment, even whether it's an AMP or anything, uses the exact same hash to lock the payment, so it's obvious that any piece of that payment is part of the exact same pool. But when it becomes a PTLC, well, then the lock is actually dependent. The signature is dependent on each individual transaction detail. So just the fact that it's using a different route or different amounts will make it indistinguishable. Like, there won't be any clear reason why Carol's 25 Satoshis and Bob's 150 Satoshis have anything to do with each other. Whereas right now with hash time lock contracts, the hash will be identical, so they can be like, okay, this is both coming from Alice, and this is both part of the same payment, if they are, of course, both spies and they are both talking to each other. But just adding a little bit of complexity, there isn't that huge trade-off on Lightning as there is on like actually doing this in normal transactions. So you can start to play around with a lot of things like this and get a very, very different degree of privacy and a scope of, I guess you could say, deniability in what the actual payments and transactions are. And then, of course, like I mentioned earlier, the fact that there are private channels, like, you know, Carol might have a private channel with somebody, Dave might have a couple of private channels or just other channels throughout the network. Nobody really knows where these things stop or begin. So Carol, like without the HTLC to make it appear as if this is all locked with the exact same payment, Carol would see 50 Satoshis going, 25 going out toward Dave and then 50 coming back from Dave without realizing that these are both me and without realizing that these are part of the same payment process rather than two completely separate payments by two completely separate people just going separate directions. So I just think there's a lot of exploration that can be done with this and just some of the general, the sort of more general technologies that are coming to Lightning, like amps and loops and paying yourself just a channel balance. I mean, imagine doing this not even as a way to get privacy per se, but just because you don't want to waste on fees, you're essentially using a payment in order to help balance a channel at the same time. So let's say, like, you know, I need to balance my channel with Carol, and that's why I choose to send my payment through Bob, and I send a little bit extra just to save on fees and not having to send a transaction out specifically for channel balancing, but I can do it while I make a payment to someone else. I can just have my wallet automatically send a little bit extra to balance one of my other channels. In this example, being my channel with Carol that, you know, got lopsided a little bit because of a couple of previous transactions, or maybe I sold something online and it filled up the channel, et cetera, et cetera. So this is actually a neat little technique to use just to make dual use of a payment on Lightning. And I think that's one of those things, just like we want to see normal transactions on the Bitcoin blockchain to be facilitating hundreds or thousands of transactions on other layers. I think these sorts of dual uses and accomplishing four or five tasks that we normally would have to do with individual transactions or individual payments, like kind of combining these things together with technologies like Taproot and stuff, and being able to add these complexities into single payments, is a huge benefit to privacy, as well as the fact that we're doing it specifically for efficiency. And I think that's what something like this could actually be, is a way to shortcut other problems. Like maybe instead of just sending it to Dave, I send it to sending the payment to Dave. Like maybe Dave is just a tiny part of the payment. You know, maybe I'm sending Dave 1,000 Satoshis, but I'm actually trying to loop out 1,000,000 Satoshis to my savings wallet. Well, why not do them at the same time? Why not pay swap to Dave so that it looks like I paid Dave 1,000,000 Satoshis, when really Dave forwarded the 1,000,000, which was not part of the payment, to a loop out, which sent it back to my vault, sent it back to my hardware wallet. I mean, there's a whole array of ways that you could apply something like that. And just like, there's a quote, where is it? If either Bob, this is a quote from the article, so this is Aaron's. If either Bob or Carol were secretly spying on network activity, they would have been misled about the size and or the direction of the payment, benefiting Alice and Dave's privacy. If spies are misled often enough, it could even render such spying activity useless altogether. End quote. That is a really big key to this, and a really big key about Lightning in general, and why I think it might be such a powerful technology for privacy, is that it probably won't grant ubiquitous privacy. It probably won't obscure every single payment. There will probably be people who use like trampoline routing with nodes that keep histories of all the transactions and stuff. Like, it's not going to be perfect. But if enough people actually do get privacy, if enough people use little tricks like this, if enough people are dual using payments on Lightning to refund or rebalance channels, to loop in or loop out at the same time, or maybe even to open a new channel at the exact same time, combining that with a payment into the Lightning Network. I mean, there's so many different things that you can do to get more use and split up the costs of all of these, you know, these decentralized financial services, whatever you want to call it. If 20%, 30% are actually no longer giving up information about the payments, and they're obscured enough that the network analysis is not actually telling them anything useful, or even more so leading them specifically astray, then essentially everyone gets privacy, because there's no clear distinction for any of it. All of it could have some level of ambiguity. It's very much like the dandelion concept. If we can be certain that 20% of the data, 30% of the data is unreliable, isn't true, well, then it basically screws up our analysis of the rest of it, because we don't know which 30% of the data it is. And all of this negates the heavily increased use of private channels, of the fact that channels are going to be, with Schnorr and Taproot, you can open up Lightning channels that look indistinguishable on the blockchain from normal payments. So you wouldn't even know that it was a channel opening. So if it was a private channel on the Lightning Network, you would just have no idea it's there. Right now, we have the benefit of actually doing blockchain analysis and counting how many channels were opened, and then looking at the Lightning Network, like the gossip network, and asking how many channels there are, and then seeing that, oh, well, there's a 20% difference here. Well, then we can make the assumption that, well, there are 20% of channels that are private and not being broadcast on Lightning Network. We won't have that benefit anymore. It will go away in the not-too-distant future with Taproot and Schnorr. If they become the standard for opening channels, which it would make perfect sense, because they're going to be a whole lot more cost-effective, and the transaction itself is going to be much less bulky and more private, and they will look indistinguishable from all other transactions, regardless of how many multi-sigs are thrown in there, or how big the tree of complexity is in the contract to execute or to unencumber those coins, to spin them out in the next round. You won't see any of it. It will just be a Taproot signature. So all of this combined, and the fact that extra complexity on Lightning and doing these little payment tricks and adding these other little things really does not come with the massive trade-off that doing something like that on-chain has, I really think makes the potential for Lightning finally bringing a measurable degree of privacy or a reliable degree of privacy to the Bitcoin ecosystem, it is very underappreciated. And I'm excited to see where this technology goes. I'd like to say a thank you to Z. Really has been amazing to kind of follow and read a lot of this stuff that's going on. And of course, always to Aaron Von Wertem for writing these pieces and breaking these things down for everybody else, for all of us out here. And Bitcoin Magazine for letting me read these articles and publishing all of this stuff. Like, they're literally one of the greatest resources in this space. I don't know who would be able to beat them. If you guys aren't paying attention and reading Bitcoin Magazine every day, you're failing. They are the best resource out there. And also thank you to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network for sharing out this show. And don't forget to subscribe to the Crypto Economy. I've got these almost 5 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week. The only ones on the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network are the Bitcoin Magazine reads specifically. So there are tons of other stuff to cover. We are 430 some odd episodes in, just an ocean of reads and works. Nick Szabo's shelling out, like I said, the numerous past pieces by Aaron Von Wertem, which are so great, so much to dive into. So don't forget to check that out, and you can find the whole collection and history of all of these works available at thecryptoeconomy.com, or of course just in the podcast feed on like Anchor or Apple or Google, wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. All right, holy crap, I did not realize what time it was. I have got to get out of here. I got an interview in just a few minutes. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you all. Another huge thank you to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network and Bitcoin Magazine and Aaron Von Wertem. Until next time, I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We will be back here tomorrow with a read from Brady at Citizen Bitcoin. We are all default Keynesians now. You're not going to want to miss it. So I'll catch y'all tomorrow. Don't forget to subscribe. Till then, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.